This episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast, is brought to you in partnership with Thermo Fisher Scientific. Thermo Fisher's cell therapy processing instruments are designed to help customers transition from process development to commercial manufacturing, utilized as standalone devices or integrated as part of a closed modular process. Thermo Fisher Scientific recommends Gibco CTS DynaSelect Magnetic Separation System, which is a next-gen cell isolation and activation instrument. Gibco CTS Xenon Electroporation System allows customers full control to optimize for a variety of cell types and payloads. And Gibco CTS Rotea Counterflow Centrifugation System is a closed cell processing system supporting a broad range of protocols for cell separation, washing, and concentration. Customers can rely on and streamline their drug development process with Applied Biosystems QualTrack qPCR and dPCR quality control tools for robust and reliable genetic analysis across various phases of drug development, supported by relevant, compliant documentation. Hello, listeners, and welcome to this episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Harris, and I'm excited to introduce my guest for this episode to you. As a professional in the regenerative medicine space, or as someone living with or caring for someone with diabetes, you likely know my guest, as he is an icon and pioneer in the world of diabetes research, Dr. Camillo Ricordi. Dr. Ricordi is professor of surgery, director of Cell Transplant Center, and director emeritus of the Diabetes Research Institute at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Florida. His research interests include diabetes cure-focused research, stem cells, cellular therapies, immune tolerance, regenerative, and health span medicine. Dr. Ricordi, I have so many questions for you, and I'm so thankful that you're here with us on Cell and Gene, the podcast today. Talk to us a little bit about your educational and professional background leading up to your current role with the University of Miami today. Tell us exactly how you got to where you are.
In the next couple of hours, I can summarize 40 years of work. But basically, I was born by mistake in New York when my family has been in the music business. I went to Milan when I was 3 months old. I grew up in Milan. And I did medical school there, and then I did a fellowship at the University of Washington University in St. Louis, where we developed the method to separate the islets from the human pancreas. And then I was recruited by Thomas Starzl at the Pittsburgh Transplant Institute, the University of Pittsburgh, where we did the first successful trial of islet allotransplantation in humans in 1990. And then I was stolen and recruited by the University of Miami in 1993, and I've been at the University of Miami for the last three decades, and still now leading the clinical trial of cell therapy, now with stem cell-derived islets after we completed the phase three trial, FDA phase three trial for islet transplantation from multi-organ donors that were sponsored by NIH as part of the Clinical Islet Transplantation Consortium. So it's been, all my professional life has pretty much been dedicated to finding a cure for diabetes and doing both cell tissue processing and cell therapy transplantation to move the field forward.
Wonderful. Thank you. We're going to get to, you know, your outlook on certainly the future of cell and organ transplantation in just a minute. But before we do, I want to talk a little bit about what have been the biggest and most troubling challenges facing the treatment of type 1 diabetes to date?
Well, the challenge is that despite, insulin has been a lifesaver, as you know, was introduced over 100 years ago, and the actual patent of insulin was awarded in 1923, exactly a century ago. And it's interesting that Banting and Best and Collins sold that patent for $1 each, a nominal value, saying insulin belongs to the world and we don't want to speculate. Unlike what happened then with insulin pricing, as we know, is becoming a major challenge. But despite insulin, the big challenge in diabetes is that you can still develop both feared acute complication like severe hypoglycemic episodes or chronic complication that can be highly debilitating, both neuropathy, nephropathy, retinopathy is a major cause of blindness and non-traumatic amputation. 1 in 3 patients have chronic kidney disease, adult patients with diabetes, which also affect chronic kidney disease, the general population over 65 years of age with 38% incidence. But diabetes is definitely still a problem. There have been tremendous improvements in technology and now artificial pancreas closed loop system and sensor for glucose, continuous glucose sensing, but still we believe that the best option for a cure, the best hope is a biologic replacement therapy, like cell therapy, like a cluster cell therapy, like an islet cell transplant or stem cell derived islets.
Sure. Okay. And that's actually where I want to go to next. You know, talk us through where we are now, as well as your outlook on the future for cell and organ transplantation in treating type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, so for islet transplantation now is very successful initially. And one of the challenges that we have with diabetes is that it's a disease associated with accelerated aging, you have premature aging, and you have a phase of decline that is more pronounced, but you don't realize it until after age 40, 50 generally. But there is a Lancet publication that shows that if you are diagnosed before age 10, you may lose up to 2 decades of lifespan. So it is a serious problem, the accelerated aging, and especially the phase of decline that can be associated with chronic complication. This will improve for sure with the modern technology of glucose sensing and insulin administration, but it's still something that is very much of a challenge. And the cell therapy, the status of islet transplantation is we have, yes, proven initial success. And we published that the survival 20 years after an islet transplant, patient survival is actually higher or better than insulin therapy without immunosuppression. And this is important because despite the use of anti-rejection drugs, this can be considered almost a life-saving if you are with the most severe cases of type 1 diabetes in an age range like 45 plus or minus 5-8 years. But still, the major challenge is that after a successful initial treatment, we have still to prevent recurrence of disease in the long term. There is a large experience published recently by Edmonton on 255 patients followed 20 years. It shows that after 20 years, less than 10% are still off insulin, and less than 50% still have graft function, so the transplanted islet continue to function. But despite this, this is very positive impact because it has been shown even by large NIH trial looking at the DCCT, the diabetes complication trial, that if you have even low level of C-peptide, you don't need to be completely off insulin to observe substantial benefits, so that the fact that you have 5, 10, 15 years of graft function, even if you need a little exogenous insulin, are associated with huge benefit, both in terms of prevention of complication and also, as we observe, also expanded lifespan beyond what you could expect with just insulin. So on one side, we are very happy that now you can achieve insulin independence, you can achieve prolonged graft function, but now we are trying to combine strategies to both have a successful islet transplant, whether it's from multi-organ donor or from stem cell-derived sources, but then move towards doing this without anti-rejection drugs that are the next trial in the next quantum leap. Now, I'm honored to be chairing the steering committee, being the principal investigator in Miami of two of the Vertex trials, one with immunosuppression to show that it's comparable to islet transplantation from multi-organ donors. And the new trial that just started now is without any anti-rejection drugs, using a macro device, a flat-like device implanted subcutaneously, but without any immunosuppression. That is there is a lot of hope and anticipation for this trial that is just starting as we're speaking.
Sure. Okay. So thank you for that. I want to talk a little bit about biopreservation. Explain the overall challenges from all the way from translational research to clinical success of the cell therapy. Where are we at?
So we've been trying to cryopreserve islets for decades. Like at the beginning, the Edmonton group with Rajot and Jonathan Lake and James Shapiro and others have been pioneering technique for cryopreservation of islet preparation before transplant to be able to bank or to decide when to do the islet transplant or potentially combine multiple donor. But this has been severely limited by loss of islets because with cryopreservation and thawing with traditional techniques and using DMSO that has also toxicity as is emerging more and more by a recent publication. There is also a recent Nature paper, very important, showing how now with the advancement of molecular technology and epigenetic screening, you can see that DMSO has a much more toxic effect than what was originally thought when was listed as safe, considered safe by FDA. But I know that also at the FDA, they would like very much to develop alternative sources because of this toxicity, besides the fact that patients don't like receiving DMSO because of the nausea, vomiting, potential GI symptoms, and the smell that you feel like garlic. If you enter in a room where the MSO product had been infused, you think there had been a big party with lots of garlic in the room. But so that there are two aspects in islet and pancreas transplantation. One is the preservation of the organ. So traditionally, pancreas can deteriorate faster than other organs like kidney that could be preserved with normothermic perfusion, maybe one day or more or 2 days. But the pancreas, we have a limit of 12 hours between harvest from multi-organ donors and actual transplant or processing. And this has been cutting down the availability. We have many, many pancreas that couldn't be used for transplantation or for islet isolation and purification because of this limitation of the cold ischemia time that is acceptable to obtain a good islet preparation or to be able to transplant the organ as a whole organ transplant. So that has been something that severely limiting the field, not just for the number of organs that could be transplanted. And already we don't have a lot of human organ for transplantation in the United States. Over 11,000 patients die every year because of the lack of suitable organs. And for diabetes, if you see the potential, even if you would use entirely like a couple of thousand pancreas available, will be a lottery system based just on organ donation because there are not enough. So that losing like more than half of them or three-fourths because of this lack of ability to expand the window of cold ischemia time or using suitable organs after a more extended time to allow like transport from one hospital to a different city and so on has been a severe limitation to the field.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. I want to talk a little bit more about DMSO. Can you talk us through why conventional DMSO and serum using cryopreservation might actually be roadblocks, especially when we're talking about the islet transplant on related engineering of cell cluster therapies?
Yeah, is well, one of the challenges, cryopreservation would be very desirable, not just to increase the number of islets that can be transplanted, but also because potentially, if you can create a window between the time of islet harvest and the time of transplantation, you could possibly induce tolerance, immune tolerance, and avoid anti-rejection drugs, introducing some specific intervention for immunomodulation and tolerance induction to that specific donor while you preserve the islet. So typically now we have only 2 to 3 days, maximum 72 hours between the harvest of the islets and purification and the transplant, the infusion in the patient is sort of a in vitro culture system where we keep the islets while you perform quality control and product release criteria, and while we do the induction with immunosuppression in the patient, making it ready to receive the islets. But say if we could do like either extend the time to 5 days or more with the new solution that allow you to do sub-zero preservation without cryopreservation, or cryopreservation for longer time, allowing you to induce tolerance and then put the islets when there is no inflammatory reaction, when there is not a cytokine storm or anything, and inducing tolerance would be incredibly, very highly desirable for the field. And specifically like the DMSO, cytotoxicity is more and more appreciated now as we move forward. And as I mentioned, there is a fantastic Nature paper that summarizes all these thousands of epigenetic changes and toxicity to cardiac liver cells and things that have been underestimated in the past as far as just looking at cell viability immediately after the DMSO exposure. We know that, like, for example, when you do bone marrow derived products with the DMSO, you have to immediately put it in the patients when there is still the last ice crystal in the bag to avoid this toxicity. So you have limited time to deliver the cell product. You have, even with mesenchymal stromal cell infusion protocols, you have a very limited time window between thawing and dilution and then infusion in the patient. So there is definitely room to improve overall the field from the preservation of the whole pancreas to the preservation of the end products like islets, whether they're derived from pancreas or from stem cell derived products. The challenge compared to single cells is that islets are clusters that can be like less than 100 microns or more than 300, 400 micron in diameter and can comprise 1,000, 2,000 cells. So when you cryopreserve, you can have this ice crystal formation that can disrupt and kill many of the cells. And then when you have to intervene with control rate freezing protocols, creating nucleation step, when you have the change of state between at the time of the ice crystal formation. And there are a lot of improvement over the decades that have been tried to be implemented, but still the loss using traditional cryopreservation model of DMSO base are not desirable.
Thank you. Okay, I appreciate that really detailed response. It's very helpful for our listeners. All right, listeners, that wraps up this episode of Cell and Gene, the podcast featuring Dr. Camillo Ricordi. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit cellandgene.com, sign up for our newsletter, and subscribe to this podcast. And we'll talk to you soon.